it is that people were given 4 weeks to return for the booster. Since then, it has been pointed out that the efficacy of the drug requires that you get the booster later than 4 weeks. Those people who have been given the four-week deadline need to find out exactly what are they supposed to do now. Are they just to turn up in 8 to 10 weeks, or will new appointments be made for those people? It's as simple as that. This is down to brass tacks.
Hi, Maureen.
Morning.
How are you doing, David?
I'm okay.
First of all, let me say happy International Women's Day to all the ladies in Barbados. And I wish them well today. And I hope that when this International Men's Day, that we have the same hype for the men also.
You're asking too much. I think the more important issue here that we should really be discussing is the movement of women in the country and what are its implications for women. I mean, for all the progress, there are areas where there's a need for progress to be made. For instance, I have spoken already on this program about that discrimination between women and men when it comes to NIS pension. And how people, women are in companies, are being asked to retire at 60 and then scramble between 60 and 67 to be able to get some money in their hands to live. Now, this is International Women's Day. One would expect that the National Organization of Women and all these women's organizations that are always talking about advancing the cause of women would put something like this on their national agenda. But they don't. All right? And having said that, just let me go on to say to you that there are areas where women need to be advanced. But there are also areas where women have been advanced. But what consequences for them, for society? That's what we should be discussing on International Women's Day. This notion of just getting up and saying, oh, it's International Women's Day, let me celebrate women. It is not enough. We need to do more than that. And the same thing will apply to men as well, huh?
I agree. But let me say, though, David, congratulations to you on your retirement. I believe that you are the consummate professional and a shining light in journalism, and I hope that persons can see you as a role model who wish to venture into that field of journalism and try to reach the standards that you have set for yourself and for the station Starcom Network and the OCM group and all that.
Thank you very much.
Permit me to say, though, because I know you personally, that there are things that people don't know about you, and this is nothing bad. They don't know that you're a humble person. Do you remember you and I having a chat by your cousin? I think he's your cousin or your uncle, Ali Rochester's barbershop. The tailor shop.
The tailor shop in New Orleans.
You are somewhat of a tailor because I saw you all
the time. No, not me. I'm not a tailor. I used to take my stuff to Ali for him to do the tailoring, not me. I enabled.
But excuse me, stitching, David, you and I chat when you were stitching.
Not me. I was stitching. The most thing you could ever see me do is to put a hem in the pants.
Wait, what else are you doing then?
Well, that don't make me a tailor.
At the Hilton, and we were in the company of Mr. Leval Greenwich and a couple others. Remember that long conversation we had? You remember
so
that
many
night,
conversations? I have so many conversations with so many people. You know, one of the challenges you face is to leave your home and go to the supermarket or something like that, and you can never get through with it unless somebody stops you and say, but you know, I have this problem. I want to discuss it with you. And then they stand up there and they talk about it. They say, wow. You know, sometimes when the children are with me or when my wife is with me or something like that, that is a big, you know, for them, it's fascinating. So that's how it is.
On a serious note, though, yesterday there was a program about regional integration. I held up for more than an hour trying to get on and then get to speak. But they spoke about all kinds of things about freedom of movement and all that. And all of them refused to address the elephant in the room. They don't understand that when people travel, crime travels. And I believe in managed migration. So you can't say whosoever will could come to my country or to another country. That would be madness. We have gangs all over the Caribbean. We have gun trade and drug trade. And how this thing could destabilize government. And then there's the capacity of our small Barbados to police Barbados as it is, with low numbers in the police force. And then we're going to ask thousands of persons to come from the Caribbean, whomsoever will. David, that was just total madness.
I don't know who's recommending. I don't know who's recommending an open door policy to the movement of people in the region. There are very few people.
There was a gentleman on who made that comment. He said he can't wait until everybody can move freely. And I'm saying it must be managed migration. I didn't get a chance to make the point.
But I think most people agree with that.
Yeah, but
everybody understands who. But because one man say that's now going to become a big issue, one man says that out of all of these people who spoke, and you chase that.
And nobody.
This is an influential man who said it.
I don't remember his name.
This person got power. They can do it. They can make it happen.
Some ATD CARICOM secretary or something, but he made that comment, and I said, my goodness. I hope that people at him are never in charge of our
movement. But you need to be careful chasing something that really is kind of out of left field. I mean, we've had the situation of Barbadians having to accommodate Guyanese, for instance, back in the 1990s or so. And we learned from that experience that it needed to be managed, that you couldn't just open it up and just let people come in. Now, we have a big problem, which the Prime Minister has been alluding to prior to COVID. I think COVID distracted her to a large extent on this. When she says our population is too small for our own viability, and that we need to have more people in Barbados who are in the workforce to move the country's development forward. Highly controversial. I think the very fact that she has repeated it so many times recognizes how potentially controversial it could be. And that is, you're going to come straight into confrontation with those people who talk about the loss of their own jobs and things like that. But we get to hear where government is going to go with this particular idea. One thing is certain, though. I mean, if you look at things like the National Insurance Scheme and the burden that is placed on that by the existing situation where we have all of these older people in the population and too few younger people to bear the scheme, you have an issue. And if the answer, if the government comes and says the answer is, it lies in making Barbadians pay more for the NIS, we're going to say no to that.
Yeah, but so you can't just have persons coming in and taking whatever jobs are available to Barbadians.
But you and I agree with that. You can't just
Sir, please.
It does not make sense following this argument about an open-ended policy. We agree on that's not, it has to be managed. But in the management of it, you can still get controversy, you know. There's got to be somebody else out there who's going to say, my job has been taken.
Okay, there's a guy who mentioned that there's prejudice. I think his name is Cyprian, that there was prejudice, discrimination. But he did not really get into the nitty-gritty of it, where in Caribbean states, where Indo-Caribbean African people, the Indians, for one reason or another, if they're the majority, they just don't like black people. I've experienced that in Trinidad. I lived down there for 2 years and was studying at law school. And I experienced it firsthand, not at the law school, but when I went into society. And it seemed like it's the norm, the way they treat. And you don't have to do them anything. They just treat you with scorn because you're black. There's nothing stopping that from being imported into my country right now. That attitude toward black people. And we form the majority in this country. So what do you have to say on that, David?
But you're a country that supports tourism, and you get white people coming here every day who don't have the same attitude to risk that you may have, but you accept it. There's nothing wrong with that. You work with it, but you see a major problem if you see people from another Caribbean country of a different ethnic background come to Barbados. Mm-hmm. So you see the double standards that exist in relation to this. As long as we can give you an economic value associated with why a person is here, you'll be happy. So if the Indian is going to come and set up some factory and that sort of thing, you are more likely to say yes, but you can still have a greater reservation with the Indian coming than if a fella comes from Scotland, Canada, or the United States.
Because for the most part, David, they're only here for a short period. That's the white tourist. But we're talking about persons coming and living and integrating.
But you know what? There are tourists who come here and buy homes here and stay here.
But for the most
you don't
part,
have a problem with that.
They don't exhibit the level of racism toward
them. Oh, my goodness. What do you know? What do you know? Come on. I'm just showing you the kind of divergence, the kind of, some people may describe it as hypocrisy that we may have on some of these issues. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, man. Anyway. Thanks very much for your contribution, though. We gotta go. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. It's 10:49 in the morning. Hello. Welcome to
Hello,
the next one.
Good morning.
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, I was trying to get in since last week to wish you all the best on your retirement, but I just put on the radio to hear you, man. What a surprise.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. I'm here in New York listening to you all the time, you know, David. So just try to stay with us, okay? And help David out, Dennis Johnson out. Don't leave us, please.
All right, sir.
You do
Thanks
a good job.
Very much.
Thank you. All right, David. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thank you.
Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
To Brass
Tacks. Good morning. Good morning, Brother Ellis.
Hi, morning.
How are you?
I'm well, and you?
Well, the guy that just spoke before me from abroad, from New York, actually he said the same thing I was about to say. I was going to say, Mr. Ellis, you can hang in there for at least another year. You can't leave us dry. You are the best moderator. You know I tell you that all the time. You're the best. You are my moderator. You have to stay with Brother Johnson for at least another year. You stay with Brother Johnson for at least another year. Don't disappoint us. I'll leave. Oh, Mr. Ellis, I wanted, you know, like talking things that you don't mind. You hit me for six, you know. I can tell.
Let me hear you this morning.
I got about three quick words at you. I want you to listen to me carefully, Mr. Ellis, and when I speak, when I finish speak, you give me your objections. All right, first one, Mr. Ellis. I would like to see the country move on a bit more and stop the dead man race thing, such as the locking down this and locking down that. I say, again, people dead every day. We don't got a day called dead free day. People are more suffering with these measures. And just know if they don't ease up with these measures, there will soon be more deaths than what corona is causing about here. Do you want to comment on what I just said to that first?
Yeah, I want to comment on it because it's a complex issue. I watched with interest a story that was in the press last week, to the effect that the Queen Elizabeth Hospital has had to farm out the kitchen because of COVID. Too many people who worked in the kitchen have been affected by COVID. I remember being here and having a conversation weeks ago with the leadership of the hospital when they revealed that 21 members of staff at that time and just over 40 patients had contracted COVID or were affected by COVID. It stands to reason that between then and now, that situation has changed. And the fact that the kitchen has had to be closed indicates that it has not changed for the better. It is an example of what COVID is doing to our health services. This is not an easy decision to make. And if you want to just open up and do as you please and stuff like that, then you have to be prepared to suffer the consequences associated with it. All the experts in health are warning people around the world about reopening their countries too early. You've heard the World Health Organization warn about that. You've heard the people in the United States, the CDC and Fauci warn states in the US who are seeking to reopen early that there's a danger associated with it because you can have another surge and an even worse surge. But, you know, there's a lot of collateral damage associated with this, you know. The collateral damage is that if you overwhelm your health service in dealing with COVID, you can't deal with heart disease, you can't deal with kidney disease, you can't deal with the people who are suffering from asthma. Other people are going to die from other causes, not just the people who will die from COVID. So this is not a simple thing. This is not something that you can just say, well, let me just open it up. All of us sitting down here waiting to see what will be the consequence of the country easing a little bit this week. What will be the consequence of that in a matter of days? But what we do know is that we continue to have a major problem with this particular pandemic. So what are your thoughts on what I've said to you?
My second point going to attribute a little to what you just said. We running from one thing, which is Corona. Major thing, Corona. Then we are contradicting ourselves. For example, government should play a pivotal role in these fast food outlets. Government should say to these people who operate in these fast food outlets, look, hey, if y'all cannot sell healthy foods, or at least most of y'all foods being sold should be healthy foods, we can't allow y'all to do business. I am quite sure. Hey, you heard doctors repeatedly on your station as well and on the other stations as well, repeatedly speaking about these fast foods, what they can do to the body, how they can, even got fired. Focus only on this Corona thing. Why all this closed down and this and that? Huh? You died from a car interview just a minute ago. Different ailments. And if you operating on one side, and opening door, but you're coming back to square one. Would you agree?
As I said to you, it is not an easy problem to resolve. This is where we are. Once you get to a certain point with this particular pandemic, it becomes more difficult and more challenging. So this is where Barbados is today. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Okay.
Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Yeah, hello. Good morning, Miss Ellis.
Hello.
A very pleasant day to you. Can you hear me?
Thank you very much. Yes, I can hear you.
Very pleasant. I want to take time out to extend congratulations to you in your lifetime calling of a broadcaster, journalist, and I'm sure that the others who should emulate you and find a path. But I want to come to you now, Miss Ellis, on the point of direction. Now, you had a caller earlier who spoke about what was said on the calling program yesterday as far as immigration is concerned. I believe your memory and my memory are not the same, but we can remember things. Wasn't it not at World Cup cricket that an immigration policy was put down in terms of the CARICOM, in terms of the Caribbean, where most people who wanted to reside in the Caribbean, permission was granted for them for 6 months to stay, but Barbados was offering the 3 months stay. But I know that, and you know that, some policy was put down in relation to the movement of people in the Caribbean. Am I right in what I said that?
Yes, and my recollection accords with yours.
Yeah. So I'm surprised to think that some won't come at this stage to, you know, I think that we've come a long way and we have straightened out a lot of things as far as the movement of people in the Caribbean is concerned. And that is something we embrace. Almost all commerce, we embrace the police, embrace everything in that area. So I think we, so far, that is on its way only to be improved on. Before I go any further, you had something to do with school, radio school?
With who?
Radio school.
No.
Well, I think it's a plus. It's a plus in relation to what is coming across. It's a plus in relation to the future of Barbados in terms of radio. And I want to congratulate whoever the person is for making the recommendation and seeing it through and the way that it is going. I think it augurs well for the future of radio in Barbados in terms of the youth of Barbados and the listening. Now, my point this morning, Mr. Ellis, that I believe, and just let me remind you, that you and I were tussling with each other from 2013. At one time, I stepped on one side of the bed, and I got up on the wrong side of the bed. I took that, and I decided I was going to get up. You remember those days?
Yes,
I do. Well, I was accused of sleeping on the wrong side of the bed and getting up. And then the position is that when we were discussing corruption, I think I was one of the first people who spent a long time with you in establishing that there was an area of corruption that existed in Barbados. I come to this point now that, you know, when we look at the situation seriously in terms of Barbados and the government is but broke, B-R-O-K-E, the government is but broke. And several people are calling on the government for financial assistance. For example, we've got the public service vehicles, we've got the entertainers, we've got several people who've called on the government for, but nobody's saying, well, let's see where we can go and how we can help. We've seen the welfare department and the national assistance board stretched to the border in terms of helping and making things right. We've just seen the government take a tremendous amount of finance and do the care packages with the situation of making people, and then they started out care packages, then they started out, came back and said that every single person should have a care package, whether they live in the Heights or the Terrace, but every person, that is complimentary. But I want to know where it is that there's certain organizations in Barbados who are beneficiaries of the government grants and these, and who on a daily basis receive funding and function, and they seem not to understand the need of help that the government at this time. My point
is, I don't understand who you're talking about.
Well, I can be a little bit more specific. There are organizations in Barbados who have a daily or weekly subscription. They call themselves, let's say the unions then. The unions in Barbados have a tremendous amount of membership, and they receive a subscription by way of salary deduction. There is one or two of the unions who are financially fit in terms of the real estate in this country, financially fit. That I have not heard any of them said, well, look, let's make a contribution to all workers, not even...
How do you know their finances, though?
Huh?
What puts you in a position to say that they are financially fit in an environment where they could also be losing membership?
I have been around a long time, Mr. Ellis, and I believe that, yeah. I can openly say that.
It's not the long time that matters.
Okay.
It is what you know about the latest financial situation confronting
an organization. If you take the Barbados Workers Union, for example, and a substantial amount of real estate at Mangrove.
Come on.
If you take the Barbados Workers Union and you take the real estate at Hinesbury Road, the Harmony Hall. You take
the real estate is an asset, Mark. You don't go down that road. And having an asset, it does not mean having cash.
You have an asset. But I'm saying that most of the workers, members have made a contribution to the life of what I've just spoken about. I'm of the opinion that if no more than the workers, that some assistance could have been given or should have been given to the workers in this time. Because when you consider that the workers are part of the society and the workers are also dependent on things that care, like the free package and different things for existence, I believe that the intake of the Barbados Workers Union can say, well, look, as far as all members are concerned, we are going to make a contribution or a subscription to them for the service to this country. But here everybody is saying the government needs to put in this, the government needs to put in that. The Bar Leaders Association in Barbados, entertainers in Barbados, Mr. Ellis, have not, most entertainers in Barbados have not driven a stroke in a hotel from March last year. You know, and if there's anybody that I believe should be asking for demands, because it would have made a contribution to the tourist industry. They would have been involved in the instrument of the tourist industry for a period of time. But I am surprised to think that organizations that are substantial have not found that their workers play a major role in making the situation as it is. They are very forceful.
Let me say to you, Frank, Mark, that I understand the point that you're making, that organizations and institutions in the country that are significant or are seen as significant should also be able to make some contribution in the circumstances in which we find ourselves.
That's right.
It speaks to a lack of, I suppose, innovation. Sometimes it's a lack of adequate forward planning. These organizations, many organizations in the country, suffer from poor leadership.